I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. Donald Trump has not been shy about his contempt for the press as a presidential candidate and as president, routinely accusing the news media of reporting fake news and of being the enemy of the people. He told veterans recently, "What you're seeing and what you're reading is not happening." Now, most presidents have had a contentious, even combative relationship with the press that covers them, but Trump's rhetoric has taken us into a new territory. A Quinnipiac University poll found that 3/4 of Republicans trust Trump to be honest on key issues, while 86% of Democrats trust the news media. And what complicates this situation is the president is a creature of the media from his days as the host of The Apprentice and is very skilled at getting attention. Many news organizations seem happy to oblige, covering his tweets, his every utterance, and public event. Well, today in Radio Times, the president, the press, and the public. And joining us is Indira Lakshmanan. She's Newmark Chair in Journalism Ethics at Poynter, also a columnist at the Boston Globe. She has covered coups and campaigns and revolutions in some 80 countries and in the United States for the Boston Globe, for Bloomberg, the International New York Times, NPR, PBS, and Politico Magazine. Indira Lakshmanan, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks so much for having me.
We certainly have had presidents who have groused about the coverage that they get from the press, oftentimes privately. Have we ever had a president who so publicly calls out and criticizes the press?
Well, absolutely not. I mean, every president in my lifetime, of course, has been unhappy with the coverage he has gotten most of the time. I think that's fair to say.
Sure.
But the level of attacks on the working daily press who cover the White House, that is unprecedented. I mean, the closest comparison would be the Nixon administration. And of course, Nixon and his vice president, Spiro Agnew, if you know the famous line that Spiro Agnew gave about calling the press nattering nabobs of negative.
I remember that.
You know, that's the closest we've gotten to this, but we have never had a president who every single day was questioning the credibility, not just questioning the credibility, outright saying the press is lying and characterizing us as enemies of the people. That really is Soviet kind of talk. That's the kind of talk you hear from authoritarian states and, you know, propaganda one-party states when they refer to the press or any critical coverage as enemies of the people. That is completely new.
Now, of course, there are huge applause lines when the president or candidate Trump talk about fake news and how dishonest the press was. This resonates clearly with his supporters and perhaps helps to explain the base that got him elected.
That's absolutely right. I mean, just last night, not far from here at the Poynter Institute in Tampa, the president had a rally, and one of the biggest rallying points for him, and by the way, this has been true since 2015 when he was campaigning first for president, has been to attack the press, to yell and point at the box or the sort of penned-in area where the press stand to take their notes and do their stand-ups and call them the most dishonest people. He's called the press scum. And, you know, I watched the footage last night of the hooting and screaming and obscenities being hurled at members of the White House press corps. And, you know, my worry, and it always has been, is that this will almost certainly eventually turn violent. If you recall, Marty, during the 2016 campaign, at a lot of Trump rallies, there were actually T-shirts being sold that, you know, maybe they called it a joke, but, you know, sort of referred to lynching journalists. It said, you know, tree rope journalists, some assembly required. So there's been a lot of violent rhetoric used against journalists, and the Freedom of the Press Tracker, which is a project across a number of nonprofit organizations, has found that there's been an increase in physical attacks on press in the United States, which is really a new phenomenon, you know, in sort of the 21st century.
Let me play something that journalist Leslie Stahl, of course, a 60 Minutes correspondent, said to the NewsHour's Judy Woodruff about a meeting that she had with Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump. This was November 2016. I think he had just become president. And she was talking to him in preparation for the interview that she was going to do with him on 60 Minutes. And here's what she told Judy Woodruff. This was a couple of months ago.
Before the interview, I met with him in Trump Tower. And he really is the same off camera that he is on camera, exactly the same. And at one point, he started to attack the press. And it's just me and my boss and him. He has a huge office. And he's attacking the press. And there were no cameras. There was nothing going on. And I said, you know, that is getting tired. Why are you doing this? You're doing it over and over, and it's boring, and it's time to end that. You know, you've won the nomination. And why do you keep hammering at this? And he said, you know why I do it? I do it to discredit you all and demean you all, so when you write negative stories about me, no one will believe you.
I mean, Indira, there it can sound chaotic and all sorts of confusing ways to hear the president, but it sounds like there's a method at work here.
Absolutely. And I think it's really interesting that, you know, Leslie Stahl quotes him. I wish she had tape of that she could actually play. But I've heard her say that before. And I think that's absolutely what it is. I mean, you know, it's brilliant on the part of the president. And again, this is what authoritarian leaders do. I've spent 7 years living in China. You know, I've worked from a number of countries where, you know, there is sort of authoritarian rule and attacks on the press. And the whole reason is in order to say, if you're constantly saying you can't trust the press, you can't trust the press, the subtext is don't trust any of the negative stuff they say about me. I mean, let's be honest here. The president is a creature of the media. Why did he even come into the public consciousness? How did he become a celebrity in the first place? In the 1980s, you know, his father, Fred Trump, was a real estate developer, but was never famous in the way that Donald Trump became. Donald Trump became famous because he courted the media. He courted Page Six, in New York. He courted the gossip columnists. He posed as a spokesman for himself, alternately calling himself John Miller and John Barron. Many of these reporters suspected or even knew that this was actually Trump calling to drop little tidbits about himself in the press. The guy who was the first reporter on the Forbes 400 in the early 1980s admits that now he looks back and feels ashamed, realizing that Trump duped him into being placed on the Forbes 400 by lying about his wealth and vastly inflating it. That was the first time that Trump was considered part of the sort of rich elite by getting onto the Forbes 400, when, as it turns out, he didn't even deserve to be there. So when press helps him, Donald Trump has always loved the press. When the press is negative towards him, then suddenly he turns against the press. That's what it's about.
But do you think the press gives him too much coverage? I remember during the campaign, either CNN or some of the cable networks, there would be a camera, you know, on the dais waiting for candidate Trump to arrive.
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't think there's much justification for just setting up a camera, turning it on, and just seeing whatever it is that Trump does. And if you remember Les Moonves of CBS News, who's now in the news for other reasons because of Me Too allegations, at the time of the campaign said of Donald Trump's candidacy, it's bad for America, but it's great for ratings. You know, so I think there were some television executives who thought, and I include all the networks in this, who thought that, hey, you know, Trump is great for ratings, it's entertainment. But ultimately, we need to be making decisions as journalists. We're the ones who decide what's news. You know, it's not just unfiltered YouTube turning a camera on and watching whatever happens, whatever, you know, whoever walks by. If we curate the news and decide this is what is important, you know, we can't just be running an open mic on whatever the president says. That said, when the president tweets things, that is also news. You know, he is the president. He is ostensibly the leader of the free world. And when he makes misstatements or lies or exaggerates, that is also news. So there is a fine line between overcovering, but also giving legitimate coverage. And, you know, we can talk about this more, Marty, but I think there are ways and ways of covering the president. We need not act as stenographers. You know, I spent 8 years covering the Secretary of State, and, you know, we would go to daily press briefings, and our job, I saw it as my job, is not to sit there and write down every single thing the press secretary for the Secretary of State or the Secretary of State, him or herself, says. That's not my job. My job is to figure out what the news is. So there are ways of reporting on what Trump says and when he's making misstatements without just saying the president said blank and then three paragraphs later saying, but that is not true. The problem is George Lakoff, the eminent Berkeley linguist, and others have proven that our brains are such that we only remember the misstatement. We don't remember the fact check a few paragraphs later. So there are other ways that we can cover Trump better to help the public understand more what's going on.
In fact, George Lakoff talks about something he calls a truth sandwich.
That's right.
When dealing with something, a tweet coming from the White House, which is you begin with reality, you put the spin inside the middle of the sandwich, and then you have reality as the other bread on the other side, and that is a way of getting closer to what is actually true and not true, and not just repeating what the president says.
You're exactly right, Marty. And an example of this in real time would be something like, saying illegal immigration into the United States is down this quarter or this year. Say that could be your headline and your first paragraph. And then your second paragraph could be, President Trump said yesterday that illegal immigration is up. However, FBI statistics show that in fact, year on year compared to, you know, last year, the year before, et cetera, illegal immigration is down. So that's a way of constructing a truth sandwich so that people remember what the reality is. They don't remember what is the falsehood that is being put out there by the White House.
But do you think too often the news media leads with the headline is what the president says and not what the truth is?
You're exactly right. And that's because we've never had a president like Donald Trump before. He is sui generis. You know, he's completely without precedent. And we got accustomed to a certain way in Washington of covering presidents, saying president says this, and here are the facts that we're backing it up with, or here are the critics. And so it is about, finding a new way of telling stories that is a bit untraditional.
New rules. I mean, new rules and guidelines. We're almost up in a break here, but so we are truly in some kind of different territory?
I think we are. And it's a question of, you know, how to, is there a movement? Are there new ways that we have to do ethical journalism to make sure that we're getting at the truth when we have someone so unprecedented who is, you know, spouting essentially propaganda and untruths? Then do we, you know, we don't want to become politicized in the media either. We want to just be doing our jobs and telling the story as it is. But is there a different way to tell it better?
Well, let's take that short break and we'll get back to our conversation with Indira Lakshmanan. She is the Newmark Chair in Journalism of Ethics at Poynter Institute, a columnist at the Boston Globe. She's done some work for NPR. McKay Coppins waiting in the wing. He's a staff writer for The Atlantic. And we'll be talking about, and we'll continue our conversation talking about covering Trump as a candidate, as president, 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
I want you all to know that we are fighting the fake news. It's fake, phony, fake. A few days ago, I called the fake news the enemy of the people, and they are. They are the enemy of the people.
That was President Trump speaking at CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Conference, February 2017. We are talking about covering President Trump, candidate Trump, with Indira Lakshmanan from the Poynter Institute. And joining us now is McKay Coppins. He's a staff writer for The Atlantic who covered candidate Trump for BuzzFeed, wrote a book called Wilderness about the fight inside the Republican Party to win the White House in 2016. And McKay Coppins, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. I know you were listening in. Do you think, having covered both candidate Trump and writing about President Trump, that the news media needs a new set of rules?
Yeah, I mean, I think that was an important conversation. I think the truth sandwich technique is an important one, and maybe one that to be more widely adopted. I think that there's a trap, though, that President Trump has been trying to lure us in the media into since he was running for president, and it's continued throughout his presidency, which is that he doesn't want to be seen simply as attacking the media. He wants to be seen as being in a feud with the media, which is to say there's a two-way street here where he's attacking us in a political way and we're attacking him back in a political way. And if he's learned throughout a long history of tabloid wars in New York City and you know, brawling with the political press more recently over the last few years, that if he can convince his voters that this isn't that the press is not, you know, an important, independent, detached institution, but rather just another kind of political interest group that he's in a fight with, then he can pretty easily convince most of his base and even many Americans beyond that to just pick sides and to side with him. And to ignore the critical coverage and dutiful fact checking and important investigative journalism that's being done. So I think that there's no question we need to re-examine kind of the unwritten rules that we've adhered to in how we've covered past presidents. At the same time, I think as we do that, we need to make sure that we're not coming off as being at war with the president.
And do you think he is, if there's feud, and it sure feels that way at times, but do you think he's winning this feud?
Well, this is one of the difficult dynamics in his relationship with the press, right? Because in some ways, you know, I always go back to his time in New York City because I think that it's illustrative here. But you know, during his time in New York City, he would pick fights with the New York Daily News or the New York Times, and then he would call them, you know, a couple days later to give them an anonymous tip about himself. And it was a very kind of mutually beneficial relationship. And there were, I think, some perverse incentives there. And I think that's you talked about this earlier.
Right.
That kind of that incentive structure remains in place today. I think that on the one hand, you know, this has kind of been an unexpected boom time for the press, at least commercially, right? And I don't say that dismissively. I think it's, you know, it's a good thing that the New York Times and the Washington Post and the Atlantic, where I work, are seeing, you know, record subscription numbers, and that we're seeing record traffic numbers on our website, that people are seeking out our journalism and consuming it because they think it's important. At the same time, I don't think that those people who are seeking out our journalism and believing it are necessarily in Trump's base. And Trump has found a lot of political advantage in attacking us. So I think that there is this kind of perverse incentive structure that we need to figure out a way to kind of break out of this cycle, but I'm not entirely sure how to do it.
Well, Indira, let me go back to you. And I quoted something earlier from Quinnipiac University, a poll looking at Republicans and Democrats and whether they trust the media, whether they trust the president. And there's this huge divide between the Republicans seem to almost instinctively trust the president to tell the truth. For Democrats, it's almost the reverse of that. Is that because of Trump, or what does that tell us, I guess, about how the public views what's going on?
That polarization in trust of or distrust of the press actually predates Donald Trump, and he has managed to ride that wave and accentuate it even more. But if you look at the Gallup poll, which goes back to the early 70s, which was the first poll that rated Americans' trust in the press, and by the way, it was trust in other institutions as well, trust in the Supreme Court, trust in the military and the police, etc. What we see is that over the decades, trust in institutions in general has fallen, but there's particular polarization starting with the advent of Fox News. So you can trace it to Ronald Reagan and the deregulation under the FCC that allowed for the rise in cable news, in partisan coverage in cable news and talk radio. So with the rise of Rush Limbaugh and Fox News in particular, a new narrative came out that was, you know, we are the only ones you can trust. We give you the facts, you decide, you know, and Fox sort of implanted this narrative that the rest of the so-called mainstream media was liberal biased and that you could only trust Fox. And so there were already decades of this message out there. You know, Trump is very canny. And as McKay says, he had been a huge beneficiary of press coverage starting back from the 80s, as we were talking about earlier, when he got himself onto that Forbes 400 list by exaggerating his wealth and got himself in the gossip columns. And so, you know, he knew that there was a way to exploit that, and he's been very clever about it. What has happened since 2016, however, is there has been an even sharper polarization between Trump supporters and Republicans versus non-Trump supporters and Democrats over distrust and trust in the media. And we did a Pointer Media Trust survey that showed that to the extreme, that basically over 70% of Republicans said they had little trust in the media. We have a follow-up survey underway right now, so I'll be able to let you know the results of that in a week or two.
Absolutely. Let me just play one more clip, and this is raising something else. This is what happened when CNN reporter Caitlin Collins, she was actually banned from a White House press event last week because she asked President Trump questions earlier in the day at an event in the Oval Office with the European Commission's Jean-Claude Juncker. Let's give it a listen.
Did Michael Cohen betray you, Mr. President?
Thank you very much. Thank you, everybody.
Mr. President, did Michael Cohen betray you?
Thank you very much.
Sorry about that, everybody.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you, everybody.
Mr. President, are you worried about what Michael Cohen is going to say to prosecutors?
Thank you, Caitlin. Let's keep going.
Are you worried about what is on the other tapes, Mr. President?
Thank you all. Let's keep going. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you very much.
Why is Vladimir Putin not accepted your invitation?
And that was Collins asking, did Michael Cohen betray you, Mr. President? Mr. President, did Michael Cohen betray you? Mr. President, are you worried what Michael Cohen is going to say to the prosecutors? Are you worried about what is on the other tapes, Mr. President? Why has Vladimir Putin not accepted your invitation, Mr. President? And she was essentially banned from a Rose Garden event. You were banned, McKay Coppins, during the campaign from covering, I guess, being in those press pens covering candidate Trump.
Yeah, so I, like many reporters, have my own strange personal history with the president. I had written a profile of him in 2014, a long profile for BuzzFeed, where I had actually spent a couple days with him at Mar-a-Lago, and he didn't like the story, and he, you know, spent several weeks attacking me on Twitter and, you know, kind of doing his whole shtick. But remarkably, you know, a year and a half later, when he announced his bid for the presidency, I was told that I would be on the, you know, what was kind of called the blacklist. So there was a list of reporters who they wouldn't give press credentials to. I wasn't allowed to go in those kind of press pens. That didn't stop me from covering the campaign. Mm-hmm. I was able to, I just had to stand in line with the rest of the attendees and just go stand with the other people. And in a lot of ways, that was actually better for my coverage. Eventually, they lifted the blacklist kind of at the very end of the race. And I was able to travel around with him to see more of the events. But, you know, I think that is that my experience with him illustrates the degree to which Donald Trump takes his relationships with reporters very personally, and he takes his bad press very personally. He, you know, I think most presidents and presidential candidates are, you know, more aware of their bad press than they like to let on. They usually pretend that they're not reading the horse race coverage, or they're not reading the profiles that are critical of them, or they don't watch cable news. And I think that's always a little bit of spin to kind of protect themselves from having to weigh in on everything.
Sure.
Donald Trump doesn't even pretend. He is open about the fact that, you know, he watches during the campaign, he would watch CNN on the flights to his campaign rallies so that he could weigh in with like up to the minute, commentary on CNN's unfair coverage of him. He told me when I interviewed him back in 2014 that he used two metrics to judge whether a reporter was a good reporter. And One of them was if they're fair and if they get things right, which I think should be the metric most of us use.
Sure.
The other is how they treat him. He said, "How if they treat me well." And that's, you know, kind of, I think, how he views the news media. If they treat me well, then they're good reporters. If they don't, then they're not. While it is clearly a political, strategic thing for him, it's also a very personal thing for him.
Well, Indira, let me go back to you and something you raised earlier, and this was at the rally that was held yesterday in Florida. Jim Acosta tweeted out a short video of a lot of the people there supporting the president, screaming at the press, cursing at them, giving them the finger. And then he tweeted just a sample of a sad scene we face at the Trump rally in Tampa. I'm very worried that the hostility whipped up by Trump and some conservatives in the media will result in someone getting hurt. We should not treat our fellow Americans this way. The press is not the enemy. I read a lot of the tweets that followed his tweet, and some people were on Jim Acosta's side, and some people were saying, well, why are you covering him? Why are you there? Is that a legitimate question?
I think that's a bit silly. You have to be there. The man is the president. This is what I was saying earlier. When I hear this argument about the press, the sort of, and I'm all for press criticism, please.
Sure.
You know, we deserve a lot of criticism. But when people say, you know, you shouldn't be covering Trump's tweets, well, tweets are official statements of fact when they're coming from the, not a fact, but official statements of policy when they're coming from the president. So, you know, we have to be out there bird dogging the tweets and bird dogging everything else he does to say, is this true? Why is he saying this? What is the context? You can't not cover the president. That said, I mean, I understand when some critics, I greatly respect the NYU media professor Jay Rosen, who has, you know, had a sort of refrain of saying, send the interns mm-hmm. to the White House press briefings if nothing is being said. I mean, that's one thing to say about the press briefings. It's another thing to say about the president himself. We do have to cover what the president says and does, but we do have to do it with context. And that's where I think that the truth sandwich idea, as different and unorthodox and not the way we were all taught in newsrooms, as it may be, you know, if it is indeed true, as psychologists and linguists say, that our brain can't hold two thoughts at once, you know, Trump says blankety blank and then three paragraphs later, but that's not true. If we can't hold those two statements and people remember the headlines and people remember the lead, then we should be, since it is our job to inform the public and give them facts, then we should be putting the fact in the lead and in the headline and then giving the rest of the context. I mean, I don't think we should become partisan and politicized. And I think the problem is, since everything comes across as a three-alarm fire because we're all worried about the future of our democracy, we're worried about freedom of speech and freedom of the press justifiably, but it ends up seeming as if everything is an outrage and you start losing the plot, losing the ability to understand what is more outrageous than the other. So we don't want to get politicized. At the same time, we do want to be delivering facts. And if you have to deliver facts a different way, that's something I think we should consider.
Let me read a couple of tweets. I'll start with James. He says, this isn't just liberal hand-wringing. Journalists at the Capital Gazette have been killed. If elected officials incite citizens to violence after screaming fake news and biased media, what will the GOP do then? Could they still ignore it? McKay Coppins is someone who covered candidate Trump and even covered candidate Romney back in 2012. Did you ever feel as if your life was in danger?
I never felt my life was in danger. I should say that I've covered a lot of Republican presidential presidential campaign events, various other conservative political events. In the pre-Trump era, especially, the general tone was, you know, anti-media, but not in any particularly interesting way, right? There's been a long conservative tradition of complaining of liberal bias in the media. I think that there's some truth to that, and I think that some of those concerns are valid. But it wasn't until Donald Trump started running for president that I noticed that the kind of hysteria that his crowds would sometimes reach. There were a couple events, I will say, during the campaign where I wondered, I entertained what seemed like a realistic idea that someone could get hurt. Just, you know, the particularly rowdy crowds. I remember one in Las Vegas where a lot of people, it seemed, had been drinking. And so, you know, that always adds some, it makes it a little bit more fraught. But, I used to roll my eyes at people who said, oh, this anti-press rhetoric is going to lead to someone getting hurt. I don't think that that's something to roll your eyes at anymore. I think that it's entirely plausible that at some point this will lead to violence. I don't think that that's President Trump's intent, but I think that in this political climate, which is very charged, we need a president who exudes some kind of modicum of restraint when he is talking about not just the press, but a lot of, you know, groups in this country and a lot of issues, and we don't have that right now.
Let me read an email from Warren. The president's attack of the press is a serious problem in the way the presses are treated. It also fosters the appearance of being all-powerful and encourages dictatorial-type governments, which is really bad for democracy worldwide. Indira, we're almost up in a break here. Do you agree with Warren?
Look, I think that it's absolutely true that, what McKay was saying, that we do have to be worried about attacks against journalists. And think about Greg Gianforte, the candidate for Montana, who for Congress, who did actually body slam and hurt a reporter from The Guardian who was interviewing him. So I think we have already seen violence being committed against journalists. And, you know, as I said, the freedom of the press tracker has tracked that, and there have been a number of cases, unfortunately, of particularly Republican candidates feeling upset about press coverage and taking it out on reporters. So that is a worry.
Well, let's take that short break. McKay Coppins, thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. He's a staff writer for The Atlantic, wrote a book called Wilderness, a book about the battle over the future of the Republican Party. And we're going to take a very short break, and Indira Lakshmanan is going to stay with us for the rest of the hour. And you can join us by calling us at 1-888-477-9499. More comments as well, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, talking about the president, the press, and the public. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane, talking with Indira Lakshmanan about the president and covering the president, the press, and the public. Let me play one more clip. This is Jim Acosta trying to ask President Trump a question at a news conference with Prime Minister Theresa May. This was earlier in the summer on July 13th.
CNN's fake news. I don't take questions. I don't take questions from CNN. CNN is fake news. I don't take questions from CNN. John Roberts of Fox. Let's go to a real. Let's go to a real network. John, let's go.
Well, we're a real network too, sir.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Indira, press compete with each other for stories, for coverage, for headlines, for front page stories, for leading stories? Is there something press can do to prevent something like that from happening?
Look, there have been a number of times more recently where you have seen the White House press corps show solidarity with one another. And one example is that during the press briefing with Sarah Sanders within the last month, she tried to not answer questions from an NBC reporter, and she tried to move on to another different news organization. And in each of those cases, the reporter said, no, please go back to, I think it was Hallie Jackson.
Right.
Please, you know, answer her question. And so that was a moment of real solidarity. Again, when Caitlin Collins of CNN was shut down and blocked, other reporters jumped up and protested. Very significant in the case of Caitlin Collins being told you can't ask a question, you're rude to shout out questions, is the absurdity of that concept, because it is the entire job of the pool reporter. She was acting as the reporter on behalf of all the television networks. So they have one reporter planted there. And, you know, members of the public may not know this, but often it's not the entire press corps who gets to go somewhere. It's one person from television, one person from radio, one person from print who's representing everyone else, who shares their notes with everyone else. And so in this case, by denying her the ability to ask a question, they were actually shutting down and punishing all television and all media. And the other question is that shouting out questions is a long and storied tradition.
Exactly.
This is what we do. So when anybody says, oh, you know, it's so disrespectful, I'm sure you never shouted questions at Obama, that's completely false. Literally every single questions were shouted by the same people at Obama, at Clinton, at Jimmy Carter, at every Democratic president, just as well as at Republicans.
I mean, it's pretty clear that a lot of the press coverage of the president is critical. Is the press biased against the president?
Look, I don't think the press, I can speak for myself, and I don't think the press is biased against the president. I think the press is biased in favor of truth. You know, our whole job is to promote and report on the truth. So if somebody, and anybody, that can be the president or anyone else, says something that is not true, it is the job of the press to report that and to bird dog that. And just today, the Washington Post fact checker, which keeps a list of all the president's false and misleading statements and actually, you know, contextualizes them and reports them down to see what is true, what is not, says that in the last 6 months, President Trump has doubled his false and misleading claims that he made in his first year of his presidency. So we're up now to 4,229 false and misleading claims since he took office, according to the Washington Post. PolitiFact, which is part of the Poynter Institute, has its own separate list of false and misleading claims by the president. They use a much more stringent metric than the Washington Post, and they don't double count certain things, so it's a smaller list. But the fact is, we're biased in favor of the truth. So any president, let's face it, Barack Obama, I think, still holds the record for the most fact-checked president, but he was in office for 8 years. Donald Trump has only been in office for 1.5 years, and I think there's no question that they're going to end up being more fact checks of Donald Trump by the time he's out of office. You know, in just 1.5 years, he's rivaling those of President Obama in 8 years.
I think anyone that watches cable news, and, you know, my heart goes out to you if you do it all day long. I have to admit, though, we have CNN, I think, on in the studio here. But there is this use of breaking news, you know, big headlines. When you listen, the story's actually 3 days old. Is the press, you think, complicit in getting everyone all worked up?
Look, I think that's a fair critique of cable news, the 24/7 news culture and the sort of breathlessness of everything is always, you know, breaking news, it's an emergency, like I used the term before, that everything's like a 3-alarm fire. You know, that is also the sort of conceit of cable news, that anytime you tune into it, whether you're in an airport or a doctor's office or at home, it's meant to be that you're getting something new. The fact is that a lot of time you're getting recycled tape that's playing in a loop of whatever news event might have happened hours ago. But, you know, that is the thing if you have to fill 24 hours. I do think, to be fair, that there is a lot of good, well-reported information on cable news, too. So I'm not trying to paint it with a broad brush. But one thing that I think is very important here is that cable news in particular, but all news, I would say, have not done a good job of distinguishing clearly and signaling to the audience the difference between news and opinion, between news and commentary. And this, I think, is one of the things that really feeds into whether people trust the news or not. You know, I think it's perfectly legitimate and fine to have opinionators and commentators on, but they should be labeled as such. They should not be treated as if they are the same as a news reporter. So a news reporter who covers the White House for blank whatever organization should have a different label than somebody who is a former political operative who worked for X or Y campaign. Those are two different kinds of people, and they should be labeled differently, just like in a newspaper, you label op-eds and editorials differently from the way you label news stories.
Let me read some more comments. One from Sherry: I'm very thankful for the press pushing for the truth. Having said that, I wish they would stay on the most important topics versus sensationalist information. Let's face it, Trump has helped the press get more eyeballs, and the sensationalist information keeps the eyeballs, but we should keep things on issues like children being separated as top stories get repeated over and over again until resolved. resolved. A comment from Chris calling the press the enemy has no bite with the public. If the public is well educated, we now value jobs over critical thinking. We're well schooled but not well educated. A comment from Tina. I hate to be picky, but where was everyone in the press in 2016? Why weren't they questioning Trump back then? It's a little late now. Do you agree with any of those, Indira Lakshmanan?
Look, I think it's absolutely fair to say that the press should have been more critical and questioning of every candidate back in 2016, but particularly Donald Trump, you could say, got a bit of a pass. And a lot of the scrutiny, he was getting scrutiny from some journalists. So, you know, it's not that nobody was trying to find his taxes. People certainly were. But I think people were also trying to be fair. Let's face it that, you know, during the campaign, there were several journalists who knew about the so-called dossier put together by Michael Steele, the former British intelligence operative. They did not report on it for the most part because it was unsubstantiated. And so it was only reported on after Trump was elected, after it was reported that the FBI and intelligence agency had briefed both President Obama and President-elect Trump about the existence of and the contents of that dossier. And that was when the sort of floodgates opened and people started reporting on it more. So yes, I think it's fair that people should have been tougher back in 2016. I think everyone is awake now, and you could argue that this is sort of a renaissance for the press. I don't want to go into the argument about ratings, but I do think that there are a lot of people who understand now the importance and vitality of a free and questioning press. And it's legitimate that, you know, people are out there doing investigative journalism. My goodness, Bob Woodward and Carl Bernstein are even
back.
They're back, you know, reporting on this president the way they were reporting on President Nixon.
Deja vu all over again.
And a lot of young people, you know, young journalists doing that job as well.
Andrew from Morrisville says, why didn't the media learn about what happened with WMDs in Iraq? The administration is now lying about Iran, and the media is falling down on its job. Indira, what do you make of that?
Look, there were journalists who were reporting on the fact that WMD in Iraq were not real. And one of the two of those,
McClatchy.
McClatchy, and I was going to say, and those are former colleagues of mine, John Walcott, who's the editor who is, you know, portrayed by Rob Reiner in a new film that's out about that McClatchy group. It's called Shock and Awe, was my boss at Bloomberg News, a great guy. John Landay, who's one of the investigative reporters, is a friend of mine since we reported from Bosnia together. There were journalists who were out there telling that story, but they were definitely drowned out by the sort of mainstream narrative that was carried by the New York Times and Judith Miller at the time. But there were others who were writing about the fact that there were no WMD. But I think it's, again, it's a legitimate criticism. The New York Times has apologized for that in, I think it was a front page editor's note years later. It's a mistake that I hope, you know, won't be repeated.
Let me ask you about James Rise, and this takes us back to the Obama administration. It's a complicated story. He had a legal battle with the government over identifying sources in a book that he wrote about the CIA and Iran's nuclear program. I Googled him, and a couple of times he said that the Obama administration was the greatest enemy of the press freedom in a generation. He said Eric Holder has been the nation's top censorship officer, not the top law enforcement officer. As I said, this is complicated, but I think it needs to be said that things were not all rosy under the Obama administration.
Absolutely. Absolutely, Marty. James Risen is entirely right, and I have written this, that look, you know, prior to Donald Trump, the Obama administration prosecuted more leak investigations than all the previous administrations combined. And if you recall, at the beginning of this administration, Jeff Sessions and Donald Trump said that they were going to outpace the Obama administration's record on leak investigations and going after the press. And so far, the case that they have prosecuted is one that your listeners probably are familiar with. It actually involves a now New York Times reporter who graduated from Temple in Philly, Allie Watkins, and they went after a Senate Intelligence Committee aide who they believed was leaking to her and to other reporters. So that's the one case we know of now. But there's no question that the Obama administration was trying to shut down leaks and did go after reporters and try to find out their sources as well. What they did not do was on a daily basis denigrate and try to discredit the press and try to claim that everything the press said that was negative about the Obama administration was a lie. That's what the Trump administration has done that's completely different, stoking up the supporters into cursing and yelling at, and I fear at some point, violence against members of the press. I want to say about Jim Acosta, you
sure.
mentioned him last yes. night in the rally in Tampa and all the vicious, vicious footage. What did not get shared as much was that after doing his stand-up and his reporting, in which people were screaming obscenities from right below him at CNN, saying CNN sucks, and you know, screaming obscenities at him. After he finished his piece, Jim Acosta calmly turned around. I've seen the photos of it. Bent down and tried to calmly engage with his critics at the sidelines and talk to them. And hats off to Jim for doing. That because civil conversation is the only way that we can get through such a period of tribalism and showing, you know, members of the public that we are human, we're not enemies of the people, we are American people and citizens, and we're out there working on their behalf, being their eyes and ears.
Let me read some more comments. Part of the problem is that reporters aren't objective. WHYY is 100% against Trump. If you were constantly being attacked, how else would you react? An email from Adam. The mainstream media lost much of their support from the American people when they promoted false and downright biased stories during Trump's candidacy and early in the presidency. Daily comments about the president's hair or weight or mannerisms turned off viewership. And he goes on from there. Comment from Michael. The corporate media helped Trump become president. Covering him makes them money. It isn't about what's best for the country. An email from Jill. Donald Trump spouts about fake news when he's the one delivering it with all his lies, giving you a flavor for how people are responding to what we're talking about. Gary, we're almost out of time here, but I'm curious then. I think we've sort of laid out the problem very succinctly during this hour. So what do we do about it?
All right. So quickly, we did talk about the truth sandwich and whether we in the press can do better by presenting information in a way that is easier for people to understand what the truth is without it coming across as partisan. Attacks on someone's hair and clothing and weight are completely inappropriate and silly, and they, you know, are not worthy of the press. The other thing is also the media can do more to be very transparent and accountable about how we gather information, explaining what are anonymous sources, why they're used, trying to limit their use and limit the use of off the record and other things that might cause doubts among the public, but sort of explaining our process and being as transparent about it as possible. These are all ways that we can build trust with our readers, our listeners, our viewers, by explaining what we do and why we do it.
Do you think that'll happen?
I think that newsrooms across America are already doing this, and there's some really good work out there. If listeners are interested, Trusting News Project highlights a lot of the work that is being done by newsrooms to engage with the public and be transparent about what we do. The Washington Post has taken transparency very seriously, too, so they're a great example of it at a national level.
Well, Indira Lakshmanan, thank you so much for joining us today in Radio Times.
Thank you, Marty. It was a pleasure.
A pleasure for us as well. And she's the Newmark Chair in Journalism Ethics at Poynter Institute and a columnist at the Boston Globe. I'm getting ahead of myself here. She covered coups and campaigns, revolutions in 80 countries and in the United States. And one of the organizations that she reported for was NPR. Also talked with McKay Coppin, staff writer for The Atlantic. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes, and you can find out more about the program. You can download a podcast of the show, find us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, sign up for a newsletter. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Alex Stern. I'm Marty Moscowen. Thank you for joining us.